This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. So we're back with another one of our lockdown interviews, this time with my friend Jack Appley, who normally conducts choirs around the country, and indeed at times the world. However, out of everyone I know, he was the person that saw his work dry up the fastest as the pandemic first started to develop. So in this interview, he'll share ways that he's staying positive and productive, even with some pretty major life changes, including adapting to communication in what is suddenly a long-distance relationship with someone that previously lived only a short walk away. And prepare yourself, it is very cute the way he describes the relationship, particularly around some of the ways they spent their time pre-lockdown. Jack is definitely one of my sweetest friends, possibly too nice to be friends with me, but you guys can be the judge of that. We really hope you find this interview interesting and insightful. Either way, we are very open to your feedback, as always, particularly around our coverage of COVID-19 so far. And you can get in touch with us via mentalpodcast.co.uk or on Instagram if you just search Mental Podcast. For now, though, we'll get into the lockdown interview with Jack.
My name is Jack Appley. I'm a choral conductor living in London, originally from Birmingham. And that's where I know Bobby from. We went to school together, which seems like a very, very long time ago. And my experience of lockdown has gone through peaks and troughs recently over the past 4 weeks. And about a week or so, a week and a half before the stay-at-home order was like announced, I was still working, and there were shrouds of mystery and doubt hanging over what was actually going to happen. And essentially all my work got cancelled. My concerts, my rehearsals, everything got cancelled within the space of about a week and a half. And with that, you know, financial security also was brought into question as well. I was lucky if people offered like a half fee for any of the engagements, but, you know, for most of it, you haven't done the work, so therefore you're not necessarily entitled to payment. So all those difficult things, and this all happened very, very quickly, as I said. And then after the initial like shock, you have to become, as I'm sure a lot of people around the country actually, you have to get far more used to your own company and being stuck with your own company. I had to move out of my flat, and I moved back in with my aunt and uncle, who I used to live with when I was studying. So, you know, I got to the end of my studies and I moved out, and I thought, great, well, this is going to be a new chapter of my life. This is, you know, going to be new. It's going to be exciting. We're going to move forward. And I'm sure they thought that as well. And then two years later, I'm back. So it's a bit of a shock for us all, really. But I'm fortunate because I'm living in a house with family and, you know, we get on. And, you know, I've been here before. It's a familiar environment and I'm able to get some comfort from that. And essentially, I can't really carry on as normal because obviously the choir practice, you know, social distancing, you can't at the moment lead a social distance choir practice. There has been several colleagues who have tried to reach out into virtual choirs. And to be honest, that isn't really my thing for various reasons, partly because of the quality of the experience, really, for either the singers or for myself. It's, in my opinion, not quite comparable to the real thing. But I'm using my time to plan for future programs and, you know, for Christmas, but also well into 2021, actually. Lots of things to keep me entertained and interested by. But there are days when you're not motivated.
In terms of when it first happened and you first started seeing all of your jobs and your calendar just falling away, do you mind sharing with the listeners a bit of how that was and how that was from a mental health perspective?
There was a very strong feeling of hopelessness. And the fact that all of this was out of my control as well was very, very difficult to take. I'd sort of come from a family where I was always brought up with the idea that if you work hard and you try hard, then good things will come. It's not necessarily going to be what you expect. It might be a little bit different. It probably will be a little bit different, but, you know, good things will come. And, you know, I've been working so hard over recent years to create this life for myself and this livelihood, which I was succeeding in. And, you know, I was happy and, you know, I could pay for a roof over my head and, you know, all these things. And then to have that jeopardized and have your livelihood taken away from you very quickly, through no fault of your own, there is a feeling of despair and hopelessness, really.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people listening will really relate to that. In terms of pulling yourself out of that, or at least managing those feelings, other than, of course, speaking to me, what things have you found helpful?
It's funny, I was watching an interview with one of my favourite conductors, Sir Simon Rattle, and he was speaking to three other conductors from across Europe, actually, who were all locked in various cities. And it was amazing because these people are at the top of their game, they're at the top of the profession, and their feelings and their positions and their mental well-being, they're in exactly the similar position to myself. You know, they're not conducting concerts, they're not conducting rehearsals. I took great comfort in the fact that actually it doesn't matter how good you are, this has happened to everybody. So the fact that I wasn't on my own gave me comfort.
Right, and I think that's a really great way of externalizing what could easily become a feeling of failure, that it's your career that is jeopardized, and that can feel very personal, even though we've seen in COVID-19 affecting everyone right up to the Prime Minister. It's not personal. This can impact anyone, and in fact the measures are impacting everyone. So in terms of those that you're close to who you're not living with, how have you found keeping in touch and maintaining those relationships?
Well, I've been maintaining work relationships, i.e. my peers. I've been speaking to them just to check in. I've also been speaking to old friends like yourself as well. I've also been speaking to my girlfriend a lot as well, because obviously I'm not cohabitating with her at the moment, much to her delight, I'm sure, because I would drive her insane in this quarantine.
Right, and for context for the listeners, she's still working, albeit from home, whereas you have a lot of free time to kind of bounce around.
Yeah, she's working from home, yeah. She was living not too far away in North London, actually, but she's moved to the country to be with her mom, essentially, to avoid being on her own. So yes, so we're speaking regularly, but it's, you know, it's very challenging. I've never really had like a long distance relationship before, and it's sort of enforced as well. It's amazing because I'm sure there are lots of couples across the country who hopefully would have had a conversation and saw the pandemic coming, and have had a very awkward conversation along the lines of, so what do you want to do? Do you want to live like separately for, you know, an undefined period of time, not knowing what could happen, lots of uncertainties, or you could potentially push yourself into a scenario where you're living with your partner. Well, it can either go one of two ways, can't it? It can even be the best thing you could do, or it could really put you and your relationship under great strain. So,
and I think that's one of the things that's been so interesting about your experience, that this, as you described it, long-distance relationship technically started when you were both in London, actually not living far apart at all.
Correct.
And that's a crazy thing I've been reflecting on, that there could be people that live incredibly close to each other, and yet they're not seeing each other, or they're maybe seeing each other through a window. And in terms of adapting to that, being apart from each other, do you feel you're still able to support each other as you normally would?
I think so, yes. I think so.
You really hesitated there.
Well, I mean, I hope that she would say that she felt supported through this difficult time. She's definitely been supporting me. It's been difficult because, as you say, like, she's still working, and albeit in a very different circumstances to what she's used to and probably comfortable with, you know, whereas we've both got quite different circumstances, which has got to be navigated. But yes, no, I definitely feel support. We speak every day, and we've got a list of TV or podcasts or, you know, activities to like listen to separately. So we actually, well, I mean, we never run out of things to talk about, but actually there's that thing of missing stuff that you could do together. So for example, we used to play like several board games together. which obviously we can't really do because there's only one board game, you know, and only one of us. I mean, I've had an idea of like, you know, watching a game like on FaceTime or whatever, like, you know, one of us would set it up and move it as the other person instructed. But, you know, it's the idea of being able to do stuff together, which is taken away. Really, which is why you have to maximise out watching like dramas like we've both been watching Unorthodox on Netflix, which I finished the other day. Absolutely amazing. So we can talk about that. And in the house that I'm living in at the moment, like dinner is a very, very important part of the day, actually. And during the week, because my aunt and uncle are still working, during the week, I tend to be the one who's responsible for the cooking dinner, which is great. I mean, I always enjoyed cooking anyway, but my repertoire has greatly improved over the course of the recent weeks. And, you know, and I really enjoy that because it's something I can take ownership of and, you know, it gives me a purpose. And, you know, that's been a big thing which I've been struggling with. That sense of purpose, which I originally had and was very, very clear to me in the form of my work and my job, I've been struggling to find a purpose over recent weeks and actually creating a plate of food, which, as we all know, a plate of food is a plate of love. It gives you great satisfaction to deliver something like that to your family and the people that you care about.
Yeah.
They also look forward to it as well because actually my cooking has, as I say, my cooking has got better over recent weeks, so they actually look forward to it. So
that's good. I am mainly known for baking in my household, but I can imagine it's very similar.
It's all chemistry.
Yes, I suppose it is. And I hope you won't mind me sharing, but in terms of you struggling with this feeling of lack of purpose, I've noticed that comes out in your mood a little bit, that it can be a bit more sporadic, or sometimes you're watching something and you're finding it more emotional than you think you might objectively.
Yeah,
almost like those kind of emotions are sort of finding places to seep out.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, actually. I mean, I was, you know, tearing up at Unorthodox the other day. What else was I tearing up at? Oh, yeah, the end of Chernobyl. I was watching Chernobyl on, like, the Now TV or whatever.
Because I tried watching The Act, which is all about Munchausen by proxy and an abusive mother. And it was not good viewing for, like, what, 5 days into lockdown or whenever I watched it.
Yeah. And in addition to my own frustration, because, I mean, usually, Bobby's known me for a long time, but I would like to think that I'm usually quite eloquent in terms of what's going on in my head. It's usually not a problem. But I've found that over recent weeks, actually, I'm struggling to have the vocabulary to describe what's actually going on in my head half the time, really.
And then I think you've also got the balance of trying to, you know, not have people worry about you and trying to stay strong for the family you're living with.
It's very true. And also them worrying about you. It's just like, oh my, do you know what? I don't need this. Do you know what I mean? I appreciate that you mean very well, but actually this is not helping the situation.
And in terms of things that do make a difference, what have you been finding helpful?
I've actually been listening to music, believe it or not, in a different way to how I usually do. So usually I'd listen to music to inform and sort of educate myself, whereas actually that's slightly switched. I'm listening to music from an exploratory, like discovery kind of perspective, actually, where I'm actually just sitting down, I'm actually listening to something. I'm really listening as opposed to just letting it go in through the ears, you know. So that's actually been very, very important. I've been trying to read a little bit more fiction, which has been very beneficial to me. And
running? You've been running?
You're right. Yeah, I know I have been running. Actually, physical exercise makes a big difference. Makes a big difference to me, actually. So trying to get out and do a 5K or whatever, like every 2 to 3 days. And that makes me feel better. So
good. And as your friend, I'm very glad and relieved. I would never dare worry about you after hearing all of that. But I'm glad that you're doing all right. Grand. All right. So we'll wrap up there. Thank you for joining us.
No, you're very welcome. I hope it was all right.
You did great.